Welcome in. This is The Early Wedge. I'm Rick Gaiman, and today we are covering all your DFS needs for this week's Players Championship. That's always fun to say. Mike McClure is here. Hello, Mike.
What's up, guys? What's up, Rick? Fired up to be here. We'll let you guys know I'm working on NBA DFS. We've got a late start time tonight, overlapping by 30 minutes. So those of you that play DFS, fortunately, this is a DFS show. If you've dabbled in the NBA streets, you can understand a 10-game slate. The final 30 minutes is not fun.
I don't understand. Sia, what is NBA? What is that?
I believe it's National Baseball Association, I think. Yes. So, like, I guess it's because we have opening day in like 20 days. So
right.
He's probably, yeah.
Right. So that makes sense that Mike is getting his work in early, spring training, NBA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All that fun stuff. Got it. Okay. Well, I could provide a couple of minutes of buffer time because I am happy to announce that the Early Wedge One and Done contest is live. Not only is it live, but it's free. Not only is it live, but it's free, and there's $5,000 in the purse thanks to our friends at Splash Sports. It's going off this week. It's going to start with the Players Championship, and it's going to run through the BMW Championship. The winner is going to turn their $0 into $1,000, and then there are very generous flat payouts after that so that we can get as many people involved as possible. But this has finally gotten through legal. This has finally gotten up and running, and it is now available. Do not wait. The link is in the description. There are 500 people in it right now. Pretty good odds that you could turn some cash if we don't fill this thing or we don't add a bunch of people to it over the course of the next couple of days. And I must tell you that you have to be 18 or older, or the age of majority, whichever is older. No purchase is necessary. See official rules for details and void where prohibited. Sia, you're a lawyer. You're an attorney. I would be in big trouble if I didn't read all that.
Yeah, you're right. I love the void where prohibited phraseology.
Whatever that means. Whatever that means.
That's fine. I just started saying that in actual life now whenever I'm talking.
Yes.
Void where prohibited.
The key to being a good attorney, everyone, and for the record, those of you that don't know, I was a trial attorney for 13 years, went to University of Richmond Law School, practiced in Virginia and Florida, still licensed in both states. There, I gave my resume for no apparent reason, except for the fact that these catch-all phrases that you use as an attorney, it's in contracts, entertainment contracts, contracts that maybe Mike, you and I look at, Rick. Those catch-all phrases are everything. You know, void where prohibited. Like, okay, well, where is it prohibited? Like, the lack of specificity is a key to being an attorney, because you can just kind of bring everything in under an umbrella where the phraseology is so wide.
Right. That's like, well, in case we didn't think of something else.
Exactly.
We're going to cover our butts with this one.
That's right.
I love it. Well, go ahead, get in. Link is in the description. If you are watching us on the Sportsline YouTube channel, you're in the perfect spot. This is where the Early Wedge is going to continue. The 5 days a week cadence has been up and running. I think this is the third week now that we have been doing this. If you're watching on the Golf on CBS YouTube channel, you're okay for now. We would ask you to move over to Sportsline because eventually we are going to stop simulcasting these, but Josh is very, very kind that he is currently simulcasting on both channels. Boys, this is the Players Championship. This is TPC Sawgrass. This is arguably one of the most familiar golf courses on planet Earth. We got a taste of Florida golf last week at Bay Hill, Mike, and now we're going to add in the best players in the world, still going to have that thick rough and water lurking everywhere. How do you assess this golf course?
I'm definitely looking for a little bit of history here, but it's still tee to green. You got to be good on approach, downgrading distance, but in favor of accuracy. But really just focusing on the approach play, going to lean into the recent form a little bit. I know we're going to talk about that a ton with guys like Colin Morikawa, and maybe the other way with someone like Victor Hovland, who I liked a lot last week. I will say in my defense on Vic, he was pretty good on approach. That putter, though, he literally looked like me putting out there. So, I think a lot of it's still going to be very similar to what we talked about last week, just not really caring about distance at all.
Yeah, we've got a par 72, 7,300 yards, the closing stretch of 16, 17, and 18. That is where you're going to see a lot of attention. But even when you start making the turn here, see, and we've got the scorecard up if you're watching on YouTube, there are opportunities. 11 is a par five, and you've got a couple of birdie chances, 12, for example. And then, of course, the par five 16th coming in. There are some opportunities. So you'll see a lot of volatility coming down the stretch here. It reminds me a little bit of TPC Scottsdale in the way that the final 9 or 10 holes can really shake up a golf tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the volatility word I think is pretty key there, because there's definitely a lot of scoreable holes here, but there's also plenty of chances to just spin completely out of control, which is why we see a lot of players who have won here. You know, we talk about Scottie Scheffler. He's not going to be as volatile as some of these others, but we talk about some of the other guys that have played here, like Rory McIlroy has won, Justin Thomas has won. And we see, and even golfers that have been really successful have had plenty of bad moments and bad rounds and bad tournaments at TPC Sawgrass. So I think from a DFS standpoint, it lends itself to not necessarily, you know, you still want to pick your players that you think are going to win, but like, you don't necessarily need to be locked in on certain players that have been great recently, because there are a lot of blow up opportunities. And I just think it's really interesting, because we're going to see a lot of names that I like as well as most of the other people are going to like. But again, it can go south real quick here.
Speaking of winners, let me read you the last 10 winners. Scottie Scheffler, Cam Smith, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Webb Simpson, Siwoo Kim, Jason Day. And then I'll round it out with Ricky Fowler, Martin Keimer, and Tiger Woods. Mike, is there a through line between those guys?
You know, I think that we're going to continue to see the cream of the crop rise to the top here. I really think that that's what we're going to see. I know we're talking non-limited field. It's a full field here. I think that we still see the top guys. And, you know, talking DFS-wise, Scotty got a bit of a price bump, but I don't think it's enough still because of how soft the pricing is once again.
Yeah, we are going to talk about that. We've been begging for the increase of pricing of Scottie Scheffler. We got it. However, they dropped the bottom out of the floor here. And actually, let's just get to it. I can't wait any longer. We are going to continue this conversation. We're going to jump over the cheat sheet. We're going to start at the top. We're going to go all the way down to the bottom, but we're going to do it after a quick word from our partners. All right, let's get kicking here. I've got the cheat sheet up. Nope. Hold on, Josh. I can do this. Josh, maybe I can't do this. Hold on. Nope.
No.
I like this one a little bit better. I'll zoom in so that we can all see this a little bit better. All right. There are a shocking number of golfers over $10,000 here. Seven of them. Scottie Scheffler is 12,800. Rory McIlroy is 11,500. Xander Schauffele is 11,100. Colin Morikawa, Ludvig Åberg, Justin Thomas, and Patrick Cantlay are somewhere in that $10,000 range. And Mike, I'll bounce it right back to you here, because you've already mentioned it. We got Scotty at 12,800, more expensive than he has been. But look what these dogs did down at the bottom. They gave us a $5,000 tier.
A $5,000 tier, and a $5,000 tier that's got, I don't know, probably three golfers that could be in the upper sixes, low sevens. I think it's, there's going to be a guy we're going to talk about a ton. I'll mention the name now. We're all going to talk about Michael Kim. He's in the $5,000 price range, and he's playing like maybe an $8,000 golfer. When I ran the initial run of lineups, he's in 100% of them. Didn't matter really how many lineups I told it to build. Anything under 500, he's in every single one of them. It's extremely soft. So don't be fooled when you open it and think, man, the pricing got tight. It did get a little tight at the top, but you can still grab essentially bare minimum two of the guys that you see on the screenshot right now. And in many cases, you could play three of them together.
Yeah, that's what we were referring to, see, as we were like, okay, well, it's just very easy to like Scotty Rory or whatever, like whatever combination of these guys you want, you can get.
So this is good and bad, because if you want like really tough pricing, so the people have a problem building lineups, because, you know, some people like, you know, Mike, me and Rick might want that, but it's so fun to build lineups the way they have priced this. I mean, I'll make the argument, by the way, two things. One is Michael Kim. We've been talking about him the last couple of weeks. I've been betting him. If you watch the Early Wedge betting show, he's been on my betting card as well in the finishing position market. If you look at weighted tee to green last 24 rounds, Rick Gaiman, which of course I look at Rick Run Good to do that. Michael Kim is number two behind Justin Thomas. Scotty, number three. Like this is the caliber of golfer. And frankly, he's been doing it, in my opinion, for long enough time for me to say, oh, 24 rounds, not enough of a sample size. Like, you can go back even further. Michael Kim has been really good across the board. So, again, Michael Kim, number two here. He's in the 5,900 range. I'll make the argument. I like the $5,000 range more than I like the $6,000 range. If we went head-to-head, and I understand it's dictated by the odds in large part, but there's plenty of great golfers, young up-and-comers in the 5,000 range. But whether you're building with the six or the fives, you can build any lineup you want. So I would encourage everybody from a DFS standpoint to do that. And what I mean by that is to get creative with your lineup build so that you don't end up with the, I grabbed Scotty and I grabbed Michael Kim and Doug Gim and Sepp Straka and like some of these guys that were in Daniel Berger, if he gets popular, like use the variety that you have before you, because you can make lineups that are different that still have some chalky guys in them.
Well, I love that we started with Michael Kim at $5,900 to kick this show off. That's okay. I will go wherever you guys want to go, but I am going to direct you back to the top of the board here. And Mike, you can get one, you can get two, you can get maybe three of these guys. Let's start narrowing it down. Which are the favorites to get into the lineups?
I mean, I'm going to have Scotty lineups for sure. I'm going to have Rory lineups for sure. But Colin Morikawa is the first click for me still. I think that he's Chief loves it too. I don't know if you guys can hear Chief working in the background.
Yeah, he's loving it.
Chief is a big Morikawa guy. So look, at 10-5, it's expensive. And we've seen comments in the chat. I haven't seen seven golfers above 10K before. Again, it's all relative when the lineups are this soft or the pricing's this soft. Colin Morikawa checks all the boxes for me. I was so encouraged with what I saw. I don't care about him finishing second in a tournament that he very clearly should have won. Yeah. He's the first click in for me here by a considerable margin.
Okay, so that is Morikawa, who is right between Xander Schauffele and Ludvig Åberg. Sia, how do you assess the top of the board?
So I like Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. I don't think I'm willing to. I think Xander's a good game theory play if the ownership's going to be low, which it probably will be. I'm not really scared off by Scotty just having some checkered results over the last few tournaments here and there with the putter and so on and so forth. I'm good with Scotty. And again, the pricing's so soft. You can get Scotty in a lineup with Rory if you want. You can get Scotty in a lineup with, you know, go down to the low 10K range. Speaking of, Justin Thomas is a guy, and I think Mike likes Justin Thomas as well. I think this is probably a pretty good setup. I'm assuming off the tee he's going to be okay. We know he's won here before. The approach metrics are so good. And because you can get Scotty and JT in a lineup, which I don't necessarily think everybody's going to do because there's a lot of stuff you can do in that 10K and above range, I think that's a really good starting point here. I don't think the putter's really going to hold him back at TPC Sawgrass.
Both Scotty and Justin Thomas struggled on the putting surfaces at Bay Hill, looking to turn that around for this week. I do want to look at some of these other names here because I don't know what the ownership's going to look like just yet for somebody like a Xander Schauffele or somebody like a Patrick Cantlay. I think that early returns in one and done, Xander is going to be like sub 4% selected in that format, but this is a salary cap format. So Mike, when you see that we're going to get this influx of casual players who are going to want to click Scotty's name, who are going to want to click Rory, and maybe even Colin Morikawa. You know, we haven't discussed Ludvig Åberg yet. We've got Patrick Cantlay here. We've got the number two player in the world in Xander Schauffele. What can we do with these guys? How do we deploy them?
You know, I'm not going to deploy Xander at all. If Xander goes out and wins the tournament, you know, congratulations. At the current price point, it's one that I think is the easiest to go away from. If you watched him last week, he had a couple of good shots, but definitely looked like a guy working his way back and just he's playing back-to-back tournaments like this. So I'm completely out on Xander. I do agree that Scotty and Rory are going to get clicked more. I think Rory's still going to get clicked quite a bit just because there is that gap in pricing from him to Scotty. The two guys that you mentioned that I'm going to play, I like Ludvig and I like Cantlay here. I definitely like Ludvig. I think Ludvig kind of gets overlooked because I think there are a lot more people that are playing this that still use a lot of data. And if you look at models, Justin Thomas has been awesome tee to green and approach, and he's going to project just slightly better than Ludvig in a lot of spots. So I think that Ludvig's the click that kind of gets overlooked a little bit relative to his upside and talent. Could be very wrong on that. Obviously, we're doing this Monday, but I think that he's the guy that gets overlooked that I want to play a lot of. And then Cantlay, it'll just come down to an ownership situation. I'm very fascinated to see ownership on Cantlay, Ludvig, and Tommy Fleetwood, who are all kind of in that same range, even though Fleetwood's down in the nines at 9.8. Those three, I want to have two of them in a lineup, if not all three, depending on ownership.
Oh, interesting. Okay, this is Patrick Cantlay's stat profile here that I'm showing on the screen right now. And it's good, Sia. I don't know if I would describe it as great, or maybe I would describe it as great, but it's not amazing, right? Like, what is the state of the union on Patrick Cantlay at this point?
Same as last week. And I played him last week. What was interesting last week, I don't know if it was on this show or if it was on the live show that we did, Rick. Patrick Cantlay is that guy that like looks like he's putting it all together, but has yet to put it all together. And because he's kind of in that star superstar class, I think it's okay to check that box. But I have worries about Patrick Cantlay's game right now. I just don't think it's super consistent and relative to some of the other guys. Like I have a lot more faith on the upside on four good rounds from Justin Thomas or Colin Morikawa, or, you know, obviously Ludvig Aubert. So I don't think I'm going to play Cantlay. I kind of was on him last week, so it makes sense for me to just stick with that and get back on him. But I'm just uninspired by his play. And for the record, he will be lower owned than some of these guys we're talking about. I just don't know that it's going to be such a difference, like 5-6 percentage points. I don't think it's going to be that where I'm going to get away with from a guy like Justin Thomas or Ludvig, for example.
Before I move us down to the 9K range, I want to pop up my favorite slash least favorite trend of the week, which I stole from a Twitter account called Golf Bet Caddy, who looks like he took a picture of Golf Channel. And it is showing the winners coming out of each wave, early, late, or late, wow, early. 14 of the last 16, you throw Scottie Scheffler on this in 2023, came out of the early, late wave. Mike, if I say one, scale from 1 to 10, 1 doesn't matter at all, or 10, you should create every single lineup out of the early late wave, where do you fall on this trend?
Considering it was 13 and 14 back to back and looking there, I mean, I'm guessing it's a weather pattern trend in the state of Florida, potentially. I'll call it 6.5 to 7. I'll call it 6.5 to 7 on the 7.
See ya.
I'm impressed by this. I'm not usually, you know, a trends guy, as you know, but it, you know, and I did look at the weather, and again, it's only Monday before this show. It didn't look like it was going to be super problematic on Thursday or Friday. Maybe I looked at it wrong. Again, I don't claim to be the weather guy by any means. But if the weather's going to be relatively flat, then this chart that Golf Bet Caddy put up, it makes it even more compelling, because clearly there's like some sort of subtlety that I'm not appreciating to see that many winners come from the AM PM wave. So if weather is actually flat or relatively flat, I think I might want to go with an AM guy on Thursday.
The big name AM PM golfers are Ludvig, Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama, Russell Henley, Wyndham Clark, Tony Finau, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland. That gets us through the 9K range, which is why I went down that low. Let's go to the 9K range here and see how you get first crack at this one. There are 9 golfers here: Hideki Matsuyama, Tommy Fleetwood, Daniel Berger, Russell Henley, our winner from last week, then Wyndham Clark, Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland. Also worth noting, and I probably should have mentioned this at the top, the pricing did come out before the conclusion of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, as it tends to do for big time events. So just throw that out there.
Which makes the pricing look even softer, because that's why, or at least part of the reason we have Michael Kim priced where he is. But honestly, even without last week's tournament, Michael Kim still should have been in the upper 7K range, at least in my opinion. But in that 9K range, I mean, there's a few names I like. Hideki, even though he's got those accuracy issues, or at least that's what the model is telling us, you know, recently, he clearly knows how to play this course. I think Hideki is a really good upside play, and I don't think he's going to garner a ton of ownership. There's just so many good guys in the 9 and 10K range for that to happen. I like Hideki a lot at 9,900. I think Daniel Berger is interesting. I question his upside relative to guys like Hideki Matsuyama, to Wyndham Clark, who I also like at 9,400. But even still, I think Daniel Berger is really steady. Like how he's playing, approach play has been a little sketchy over the last couple of tournaments, but everything else is absolutely checking out for him. So I like Berger. I like Wyndham Clark's upside a lot. We know when he's dialed in, he can absolutely win a tournament. And I like Hideki Matsuyama.
Daniel Berger had an excellent final three rounds at Bay Hill. Hideki Matsuyama's history here is splendid. T6 last year, fifth in 2023, missed cut in 2021, T8 in 2019. And of course, as everyone remembers,
yes,
he was leading this golf tournament after one round in 2020. You're obligated to say that about yes. Hideki Matsuyama every time the Players' Championship comes around. Okay, let me get this over to you, Mike. Let's take a crack at this 9K range and break it down for me, please.
Fleetwood's probably my first click unless the ownership gets out of control at 9,800. I just look, Tommy Fleetwood's not winning this golf tournament. Am I going to bet him to win it? Yes, I am, but he's not going to win it. He's probably going to, you know, maybe sixth, seventh place. So you definitely miss your top five cash as well. If you play him top 20, you're very happy. He's going to have some success here. I love what I've seen from Tommy Fleetwood still. So he's going to be the first one in. As Sia mentioned, I like Hideki Matsuyama a lot. I think Daniel Berger is interesting. I think that paying that price point for Daniel Berger in this field just doesn't feel right. It feels kind of weird. Which makes him a good play, probably. Yeah. I don't think a lot of people are going to manually go click Daniel Berger's name. So I like Hideki. I like Fleetwood. I like Berger. That's really kind of it for me. But that's mostly because I am grabbing a ton of Colin Morikawa, which is dictating the rest of the build. So it's mostly Morikawa and Fleetwood in this particular area. I know those are two price ranges, but that's mostly how I'm starting builds. So I'm not getting a ton of these other guys here.
Well, let me make some unnecessary demands here for those who are trying to figure out a couple of different paths. See, if I said you must play one of Sam Burns, Tony Finau, or Victor Hovland,
ooh,
you must play one of them. I will now ask you to reveal who that player is.
Okay, so by the way, last week, remember, I think it was, I can't remember which show. We do so many shows, five shows a week, folks.
You do so many shows, Sia.
Where you said something to the effect of, why is Sam Burns in this 9K range? That was last week. And now he's even at a higher price. And I understand pricing's different.
He was miserable last week.
Right. 9,300 makes no sense. I would, believe it or not, of those three, I'd go back to, I shouldn't say go back to, I'd go to Victor Hovland. Because I can see a path for Victor Hovland. If the, like, again, we saw what happened with the putter last week. That's horrific. But Doug Gim has been good on this course, specifically with the putter in two of the last 3 years. Like, if there was ever a team no putt big event, it might be here at TPC Sawgrass. So give me Victor. The ball striking could be there. Who knows? Great. I mean, not who knows, but the putter could be there.
It's tantalizing. Yeah. Had one of the worst putting weeks of his career, but he picked up nearly 4.5 strokes on approach, and he has historically putted well at TPC Sawgrass. Okay, Mike, I'll ask you the same question. It's one of Sam Burns, Tony Finau, or Victor Hovland, and you must play one of them.
I think it's still Victor. I think C is right on it. I mean, look, he played two rounds. He gained, what, 4 strokes last week on approach?
Yep.
You know, ignore the fact that he lost 6 strokes in 2 rounds putting. But just on approach, we care about approach mostly at this golf course. I'm not paying that for Burns. I don't like it. Finau, just like I'm only probably playing Finau somewhere where you can really kind of brute force your way around with some distance. And I don't think that's going to be this test. So everything else in the game hasn't really been all that inspiring for me. I'm not playing any of the three, but if I had to and I play in your game, it would be Victor.
You. I appreciate you.
I think I convinced myself to have some Victor Hovland lineups just from you posing the question.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry in advance if that ends lineups. Up being the reason. I will point this out. I would have to look this up. This might be like Tony Finau's worst golf course for a place that he's played this much. I mean, he's played here 8 times. If you're Tony Finau and you play a golf course 8 times, you usually have a decent record. His best finish here is T19. He's missed the cut in half of his trips. So, not a place that he has been able to brute force his way around, like Mike said. Let me go to this 8K range here, and we'll kick it off with, 11 golfers. McNealy, Spieth, Will Zalatoris, Sepp Straka, and then Tom Kim is right in the middle. The bottom half of this range is Taylor Pendrith, Robert McIntyre, Siwoo Kim, past champion, Jason Day, Benny On, and Minwoo Lee. Mike, you're going to get first crack at the 8K range, please.
So I'm not going to say there's anyone I have to have in this 8K range, but I do. I kind of like Will Zalatoris. I like a big game hunter. That's certainly what he is. But everything has looked kind of good. I think he's kind of laying under the radar a little bit. We're not talking, you know, like challenging to win events or anything, but he's quietly hitting a lot of greens in regulation, which is what you have to do here. You know, the putting is obviously always going to be a concern for me, but I think that Will Zalatoris is playing, again, under the radar, pretty good golf right now and profiles pretty well here.
Hasn't missed a cut in 2025. He's got five starts. I'm gonna make this T26 a top 25. So that's four top 25s. Nothing inside the top 10 yet, so lurking a little bit. Ball striking numbers coming back around. When you start to analyze this 8K range, Sia, which are the names that are most beautiful to you?
There's two that jump out to me, and one is Will Zalatoris. I'm not a big Will Zalatoris guy, but I can't argue with the argument that Mike just lobbied. I mean, I watched him on Saturday go out with Matt Fitzpatrick. And I remember somebody tweeted at me. They said they liked the they liked Zalatoris. I think it was -125 over Matt Fitzpatrick. And I was like, all right, yeah, I kind of like that play. So I watched it. I put a little bit of money on it. And Will Zalatoris was actually pretty bad through the first nine holes. And it really looked like he had no confidence. He was playing very conservatively. I think he was like trying to figure things out like he has been doing. But I was actually impressed with his second nine and how he finished the tournament on Sunday. I do think he's still trying to figure it out, but he is a classic case of who do I want to be, or do I want to try to be early on Will Zalatoris? This could be the time to be early on Will Zalatoris, because I'll tell you, the guy right next to him, Sepp Straka, is going to get a ton of the ownership in the 8K range, and it's very well deserved. We've been talking about Sepp Straka. He's been amazing. You take the name away from Sepp Straka, and you just look at the profile, and you think he's a top 10 golfer in the world. And by the way, Rick, I did a survey on Twitter, and it was titled this. This is from our live show. I said, these two guys, Sepp Straka and Tommy Fleetwood, are tied with nine holes remaining. You can pick one of the two to win. 61% went with Sepp Straka, FYI. Yeah.
So I win then.
No, I win, except for the fact that I lost. No, because you had Tommy Fleetwood. I had
Sia, you took a poll on Twitter. Obviously, the majority is wrong. So that's true. Given. So I am correct on this.
I'm only wrong to the extent I thought it would be 90% to 10%.
I did see that I was losing early. I did not see that. What were the final numbers? 60-something percent?
61 to 39%.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was a little bit worse than what I originally saw when we kicked it off here. I mean, seriously, though, Sepp Straka has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Is this, how sustainable is this? I mean, are we living in a world where Sepp Straka is maybe like a top 12 player in the world? Is that the world we live in right now?
I personally think the volatility is such that we can't really say that, because we are going to see, and we have seen even recently, some inconsistent play. I mean, as I'm looking at this, I'm looking at it and like I'm trying to adjust my eyes here. I'm seeing a missed cut, although, man, this is really good. You have to go kind of down the board to see him in the 30s and the 20s in the missed cuts. Yeah, I mean, here's the problem. Sepp Straka had a certain reputation a few years ago, and people don't get away from people's reputations. And that goes for some of the higher priced golfers too. I think we fantasize about some of these golfers who are in the 9 and 10K range that they're a certain thing, and they might not be. And guys like Sepp Straka and Michael Kim just happen to be catching up, but we don't think their pedigree is as good, so we don't treat them as seriously.
Sepp Straka is Sia's Michael Thor Bjornsson. What does that mean?
Jeff Stenberg is the biggest Michael Thor Bjornsson fan of all time. He just improperly phrased that, but I know what he's trying to say.
Got it. So basically, Sepp Straka is
Jeff's Michael Thor Bjornsson.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay. Got it. Anybody else in this range, Mike, before we move along, that is worth serious consideration?
Well, I don't know how serious the consideration is, but I love a good narrative. Narrative Street is one that is frequently traveled.
Yeah.
How about Jordan Spieth? He was vocal about wanting to get to play last week.
The snub.
Not a place that's really been very good to him in the career. but you have the opportunity. It's, you know, I think that if you were really upset about the snub, you've got the opportunity to come prove it. The price point is such that no one is playing him. Do I want to back motivated Jordan Spieth? Maybe. I might play a Jordan Spieth lineup. Mm. One single Jordan Spieth lineup.
I get it.
I think I'd rather, I mean, would you rather play Jordan Spieth or Victor Hovland?
That's a really good question.
I mean, the only answer is to play them both in the same lineup.
Just go for like max volatility.
Yep.
Nobody's going to do that. It's a good game theory.
That is true.
Frankly, taking two 8K guys is probably a good game theory play because people are going to go so low and so high. They might still take Straka, but if you take two guys in that range, you're probably insuring yourself a different type of build.
Yes, it'll be it'll be the barbells, right? People living up top, people living down bottom. There's not going to be a lot of people living in the middle. Let's continue this conversation, but I'm going to pay the bills first. Then we'll go down to the 7K range, the 6K range, and the 5K range after a quick word, Josh, from our partners. And we're back. The 7K range, I am not going to read them all. There are 18 of them, but I'll give you a couple in each area. Corey Connors, Davis Thompson, Adam Scott up top. The middle, that's like the Cam Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, Harris Inglis range. And then the bottom, that'll get you Keith Mitchell, Akshay Bhatia. Sia, you're going to get to go first here. This is that range that I think could make or break some lineups here.
Yeah, perhaps, although again, with that 5K range opening up, I think the 6K range and maybe even the 5K range is sort of in play. I feel like 7K range, a lot more talented than 6 and 5, but I think it starts bleeding together once you get to the low 7s. With that said, I wasn't on Corey Connors last week, to my detriment. I like him at 7,900. He was tied T13 here last year. My model, which I built on your site, Rick, he rates out pretty well, and he does seem like a pretty good course fit with the ball striking. So Connors at 7,900, I don't really see, as much as we talk highly of Sepp Straka and Michael Kim, I don't think Keegan's on that level in terms of like being that hot. But Keegan looks really good. He looks really confident. I was so impressed with his round four, but even without his impressive round four, he had a really good tournament. Like him at 7,700. A couple more guys. Aaron Rye, popular, I think a little popular last week for good reason. Should be popular this week at 7,100. As a maybe an outlier play that probably isn't going to get a lot of ownership, I'll go Akshay Bhatia. I think he's in a tournament like this. I think he's worth maybe taking a shot at because I do think he has the requisite upside. Plenty of downside too, but it's DFS, it's tourney style. I think he's an okay play.
These are kind of the events that I do like to get Corey Connors because it's $7,900. I don't need him to win, and he's obviously not going to win. So when he finishes like T6, I'm thrilled with it. Akshay snapped that stretch of ninth place finishes, missing the cut at Bay Hill. That's his first miscut since the Wyndham Championship. So when we got into the playoffs and rolled through the fall and rolled into the new year, even went over to Dubai and played, that was the first weekend that Akshay had missed. So maybe a quick bounce back for him. I've got a bunch of golfers here for you, Mike. Where do you want to take us next?
I definitely have to point out, Sia nailed it here with Connors and Aaron Rye. I think those are the two that just absolutely stand out in terms of really being playable at that price point. Corey Connors, he's played very well here too. Yeah, so I am all aboard on playing Connors if you want to be in this range. Adam Scott, always interesting to me. Never going to win a golf tournament, I don't think, at this point anymore. But just another guy kind of like Will Zalatoris in that he's just been kind of lurking there and could really give you a top 20 type finish and, you know, does have some of that upside. Again, I think he does seriously lack some win equity at this point in his career, but he has played well here earlier in his career. And I think that he's still playing well. I love the fact that you don't need all the distance anymore. So I like Adam Scott a little bit. Again, no one's going to play him. So those are the kind of guys that I'm looking at that no one's going to play him. He's going to make the cut and give me four good rounds. So I like Scott a little bit. Other than that, I don't have a ton here. And it just kind of goes to the builds that I'm getting. And a lot of those builds, it's the top heavy and then the unfortunate 5K range that we're going to talk about. It really skews a lot of the builds. So as Sia mentioned, I think that if you can live in that 8K and 7K range, you're going to get very different this week.
Yeah, agreed from that standpoint. I'm just trying to click through a couple profiles here, give out the visuals, and I would have expected Keegan's play to tail off by this point. I think it does not get talked. I mean, it gets talked about a lot, but I don't think people realize how hard it is to be a Ryder Cup captain in general, and then also try to play through it. And he is playing through it and seemingly playing some of the best golf that he's played in a while. So Keegan off another really great finish last week, thanks to that going out in 29 on Sunday. See anybody else in the 7K range, or you just want to keep rolling?
I think we keep rolling, and it's mostly because I think the 6 and 5K range, particularly 5, is really rich. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
I've got one in the 7 I have to mention again, because we all kind of liked him a little bit last week. How about Nick Taylor?
Yeah.
Like Nick Taylor, 7,300, looking at some of the course history as well, didn't play in 22, cut in 23, but the most recent outing, T26, a T48, and a T16 all the way back in 2019. The approach play is obviously there. Like, what do we do? I know the T31 was maybe a little disappointing, but another guy again that's just been making cuts, and is everyone just completely off Nick Taylor this week because he didn't finish 15th instead of 30th?
Seems that way. Yes, but you're right. I mean, the T31 last week was maybe a touch soft, but I mean, he was one bad round on Sunday when he's already out of it. Like, I don't know, that's not the end of the world. And he hasn't lost strokes on approach since the FedEx St. Jude. So basically since the fall portion of the schedule started, he's been really, really good. Obviously the win at the Sony, and he just keeps chugging along.
Can I talk about a fade candidate? Kind of almost like as a precursor to our betting show tomorrow at 7. Because I mentioned Will Zalatoris going out against Matt Fitzpatrick on, what was it, round 3. Did you see Matt Fitzpatrick's profile from the API?
No, but I know that he is in a prolonged slump right now.
Crazy prolonged slump, but the only reason he had a reasonable finish, look at the putting numbers. Like, his ball striking was atrocious. You're not going to get away with that this week. I mean, it's just the putting numbers are going to flatten out a little bit just because of the nature of what we see with putting at this course. This ball striking is awful. Like, I'm looking to fade Fitzpatrick in matchups. I'm not playing him in DFS. Just something to look out for.
It's the 6th best putting tournament of his career, and he's a very, very good putter. So that's the high end of things. And he lost 6.3 from tee to green at Bay Hill. He lost another 4.5 at Torrey Pines. So we're talking about 11 strokes from tee to green in his last 8 rounds. Does not seem ideal.
So just keep in mind, too, he has a pretty good track record here, a couple top 10 finishes recently. So I don't think he'll get a ton of attention DFS-wise, but I'm just saying in the betting market, you might get some respect with Matt Fitzpatrick, which should lead to a good number on the other side of it.
Yeah, he had good numbers at Bay Hill last week too. This is usually a good stretch of golf for him, but man, some really ugly stuff happening. Okay, 6K range here. I've got 21 golfers from JT Poston and Kurt Kitayama at the top to Brian Campbell and Harry Hall in the middle, all the way down to Matthew Pavone and Laurie Cantor at the bottom of this range. Mike McClure, where would you like to start here?
Ricky Fowler.
Yeah. God, I know.
6,600, Ricky Fowler, got some Florida history. I mean, I guess kind of the same boat with Spieth a little bit, just motivated. The results actually haven't been that bad. I know that we had the situation at Waste Management, but it hasn't been that bad. And I'm not paying 7,600 for him. I'm paying 6,600 for him. Mm-hmm. I'm playing some Ricky Fowler this week.
Yeah, I think I described it as like a 1 week only. Like, I'm just going to try to, I have not basically invested in Ricky Fowler for 18 months and I have not been burned by it. I'm just going to try to, step in, take my Ricky Fowler, step out and don't have anybody, ask any questions about it. Okay. See ya. Let's bump it down to you. We've got a lot of interesting names here. Guys headed in a lot of different directions. What do you want to do in the 6s?
Let's look at the 3 names above Ricky Fowler. Not Max Homa, but the 3 names above that. Let's look at JJ Spahn, Ben Griffin, who I'm not, I do like, and Lucas Glover. I mean, if I had to rank them, it would probably be J.J. Spahn, Lucas Glover, and then Ben Griffin. I don't love this range in general because I do like the 5K range, but I think all three of those guys profile really well here in terms of course fit. So those three, J.J. Spahn, Ben Griffin, I like J.J. Spahn's iron play in general, by the way. Same with Lucas Glover with respect to the ball striking. Same with Ben Griffin. I like those three, and I like Justin Rose down towards the bottom. I think he's 6,300. Really impressive last week. These tough courses, you know, it can go either way on this course, but I think he has some serious upside.
Ben Griffin lost 6.5 strokes from tee to green last week and still finished T45. That was after the fourth place finish in both Mexico and the Cognizant. So a couple of different ways that he can get it done. And then J.J. Spahn, since the start of since the start of 2025, he's been an absolute flusher. Just continues to pile up strokes on the second shot there. Mike, back to you. We've got a couple of names covered. And I will say Max Homa did a interview with our Patrick McDonald over on the Golf on CBS channel in which he talked about some of the swing changes and things that he's going through. So go over there and watch that if you're interested. Mike, anybody else in the 6K range that is worth a click?
I mean, no one's going to play Kurt Kitayama.
That's right.
Including me. But the name is interesting. The models still like him a little bit at times. So I think that's interesting. I like Ben Griffin a bit that Sia mentioned. Other than that, the one comment that Sia made earlier in the show that I strongly agree with, if we could track it somehow, I would put the 5K range over the 6K range this week in terms of performance. I am very confident in that.
I think there are two profiles worth pointing out before we move on, just because I think they're interesting. JT Poston, historically great putter. I don't know if he's putting with a wedge. I don't know if he's like closing his eyes. I don't know what's going on, but he has been coughing them up on the greens in a big way since the start of 2025. The rest of his game looks great. I have no clue what is going on here. He is 6,900. And then I will point out at $6,000 is Laurie Cantor. You might've heard his name because he is now going to be the first golfer who played on LIV to play in a PGA Tour event. He did his time. See ya, you do the crime, you do the time, but now your debt to society is paid. You get to come back and he's got four starts in 2025, all on the DP World Tour, a third in Dubai, a win in Bahrain, a 35th in Qatar, and then a bizarre runner-up finish in South Africa where the weather was so bad after three rounds, the two guys tied at the top just went to a playoff and they played one playoff hole. So they didn't play the final round there.
Did he have to serve his full sentence or did he get out on out early on good behavior?
No, he was a very bad boy. He had to serve the whole thing. The full year. And he's been playing around the world since.
Rick, can I get a 30-second editorial note on how you feel about maybe guys not renewing their contract and just kind of waltzing back in to the PGA Tour?
I think it's going to happen.
I'm okay with it happening. I just want to know if you have any like strong opinion, like kind of for or against.
No, like I think like Bryson will resign. Quite honestly, I think he loves it. I think he loves that. But I think like Brooks is like, wow, I just got my $150 million and now they're going to let me play all these events again. That's sick. Like I think he's going to be thrilled about that. It's like, this has worked out perfectly for me.
Fair enough.
The 5K range. Here it is. This really bottom of the board, which has a lot of really good golfers in it. And there's a lot of them. There's 58 golfers here. It starts with some of the guys that we've already kind of mentioned. Michael Kim is $5,900. He's there with Jake Knapp and Gary Woodland. At $5,500, you could get Matt Kuchar or Ryan Fox. Alex Smalley is $5,400. Yeah. Then if you go down to the min price, Luke List, Peter Malnati, Davis Riley. Maybe we draw the line somewhere here. But Mike, you get to go first. We opened up the show with a $5,900 Michael Kim. There's a lot of good players here that you can build with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to break the rules and just rapid fire. I would play Michael Kim.
Yes.
I would play Nicolai Højgaard.
Yep.
Yes. I would play Andrew Putnam. I would play Gary Woodland at 5,900. I mean, I could keep going. Doug Gim at 5,600 is playable. Jake Knapp at 5,900 is playable. Alex Smalley at 5,400 is like $1,000 too cheap still in this field. there are many of them. I think that having two of them in a lineup is not only fine, is probably a preferred build this week, to be honest with you.
Yeah, as soon as salaries came out, and I kind of did my best Sia Najat impression. I was like, let me just go run lineups and like see what happens here. And it was just like Scotty, Rory, Højgaard, Smalley, Scotty, Rory, Højgaard, Smalley. Like, just, you know, two or three 10K guys, and then a bunch of these names down here. And Sia, Mike's right. The price is so cheap. You can make a case for a lot of these guys, but there are a handful of really solid options, even if they were $1,000 more expensive.
We can question the upside with some of these guys in the 5K range, but as it relates to kind of making the cut and having a couple impactful days, I like Mike was reiterating too, I think this 5K range and the 6K range are the same thing. They just happen to be different prices. And shout out to the chat, because they've been pointing out some of these guys as well. I don't need to go over Michael Kim again. Doug Gamm, I guess we don't really need to go over that. I mean, obviously he has the putting issues, which are like Kyle Stanley-esque. I could probably come up with a less dated reference, but he rates out so well with the ball striking, and he's been actually quite good with the putter, quite good for Doug Gamm over two of his last three here, where I think he had a T6, T16, and he gained both of those times with the putter. Smalley, I like. Short game monster, by the way. So we talked about tee to green. I talked about weighted tee to green. Like, that short game is going to come into play. Smalley's approach play could be a little bit better, but at 5,400, the upside is absolutely there. And then I'll just mention a few other names in like the really low 5K range. I've been on Isaiah Celinda over the last couple of weeks, and he's making cuts, and I do think he has plenty of upside and plenty of scoring ability. It can go the other way for him as well. I'll say the same about Jacob Bridgman, who I've been betting on a lot. If you follow my picks, you know I've been betting on him a lot. I've been playing him in DFS. He's also making cuts, and he's shown some serious upside. This guy is really good. He can be really good with the iron play, and at 5,300, I do not mind throwing him into some lineups. And then Joel Damon is 5,100. I mean, but why does he not profile well? Good history here. Approach has been great. He's going to keep it in the fairway off the tee. I mean, couldn't you make the argument that, I don't think Joel Damon's some like superstar, but couldn't you make the argument that he's also 1,000 or 1,300 too cheap?
Yeah. Joe Highsmith won two starts ago. Like, there are just a lot of really good options. So let me turn the conversation in a different direction, Mike. So we're talking about modeling. We're talking about building lineups. If you were putting in 10 lineups, how many would have two or more golfers from this range?
Let's look at these. Okay. One, two. Just if I follow what the computer wants, all 10 of them.
Jeez. I love that. This is the week to do it with the volatility and the fact that,
I mean,
this
can I interest you in a lineup with Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood as the first three in, and then number four in is Michael Kim? Like,
yes, I'm interested.
The thing that is the problem for me, at least, you know, I know that you want quote unquote win equity, right? But it's so top heavy at the top. Like, do I want to play someone in the 5,900s that has, in terms of like simulation to win, right, 0.7% probability to win? Or do I really need to spend an extra $1,200 to take my 0.7 to 0.9? Because that's essentially what you're doing in a lot of these cases here. I would rather jam Scotty, jam Colin Morikawa. And if you don't like Scotty, like, there's so many lineups here I'm looking at, like Rory, Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Michael Kim, and you can pick whoever else you want for the last spot. Like, there are so many lineups that make it work, right? So, yeah, see on the screen here, just it's interesting. The 8Ks, if you can find ways to live in the 8Ks, you're going to be so different this week. It's truly unbelievable.
I think, Rick, this is a good tournament. I'm talking about not like DFS tournaments, but this is a good tournament to do some like different style GPPs. In other words, like, I'm a guy that doesn't build a ton of lineups. I'll have like a couple of like maybe the $100 single edge, some 33s and the 15s and that kind of thing. And it might only amount to eight or nine lineups, but I think this is a good tournament to do like the $3.20 max, for example, and get 10 or 20 lineups in that one and just have some of your core at the top that you know you want to filter through. And they can miss the cut too. Let's be real about what can happen here. But yep. filter through some of these 5K guys almost all on a rotation. And the beauty of a 20 max is you don't necessarily need to import the Excel spreadsheet and do what like the 150 bros do. You can like hand build those lineups anyway and just kind of rotate through some of these 5K, maybe a couple 6K guys too, and just have your cream of the crop kind of as your core and just see how it works out. I think this is a really good tournament to do that.
I like to see I call them the 150 bros. There was just a tinge of something in there when he.
It was mostly jealousy and envy. I don't want to deal with Excel spreadsheets. I'll just go ahead and hand build. Like, I mean, Mike's the 150 bro that I'm talking about. Although he isn't really. No,
in golf, I play 3 to 5. Golf, I play NFL, different story, but golf 3 or 5.
Well, listen, I've got another contest for you if you guys are interested in it. It's called the Early Wedge One and Done, and it is live. It is up and running, and it closes in just a few days. It is, again, free to play. Free. Put $0 in, and then have your chance to win a share of $5,000. $1,000 goes to the winner. The lowest amount that you can make is $100 to get yourself in the money. Get the $100 off of $0 is a very good ROI. Gentlemen, anything else before we get out of town?
Well, I have to point out Mark Green's comment, which may as well be a shadow account for me, because he says, don't rule out Carl Phillips, looks like a future star. Rick, if you remember, you relegated to Mike McClure and I only picking one golfer from the Puerto Rico Open. It was at the end of this show. I said, Rick, I object. I'm going to give you three because I've already bet them as outrights. It was Norgaard. It was Hoey. And it was Carl Phillips at 70-1. And everybody seem to enjoy that ticket because I put it out on the bets show, which comes up tomorrow. I tweeted it out. I put it in the Sportsline Discord, which all of you in the chat hopefully are a member of. And we had a nice little win on Carl Phillips, who again is in this field. And I don't hate the call, by the way. I'm not playing him. I don't think Mark Green, but I don't hate the Carl Phillips call.
I do remember you breaking the rules. It's been reflected in your file.
Yes. Yes.
But yes, the ticket was nice. That's also in the file, but the rule breaking also in there. Okay. Well, then I think that'll do it. Today is Monday, so we are going to be back on Tuesday for the Best Bets show, Wednesday, and then Friday and Sunday, and who knows? I don't know. Just maybe more, maybe less. I don't know. Definitely not less. And definitely not more. That's exactly what it's going to be. We are thanking producer Josh, who does all the hard work behind the scenes. That's Mike McClure. That's Sian Ajad. I'm Rick Gaiman. This has been The Early Wedge. We'll catch you next time.
Podcasts.